Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. Vern, how you doing today, my man?
I'm sweaty. How are you?
Vern, I'm doing great. How often do you eat breakfast?
Every day. It's my favorite meal of the day.
See,
I normally have the same thing every day, every day.
We were just talking about how we were told so much as kids that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and then that's the meal that I skip the most. I eat lunch most days. I eat dinner just about every day. I don't really eat breakfast a whole lot.
Well, I think that also plays into your schedule, right? You probably have dinner after the show, so that's, I think, a late dinner, so maybe you stay up a little late, get up a little late. I can understand skipping breakfast. I'm known to do that now. Now, as I say, I have breakfast every morning. Breakfast might happen at noon. I might make myself a breakfast sandwich at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and that'll be my first meal of the day. I always have breakfast, but the time certainly varies. Like the Royals have, back-to-back night games. I'll probably sleep in a little tomorrow, and maybe not have breakfast until like 12:30.
You said that you eat the same thing for breakfast. What do you normally get?
Normally just a run-of-the-mill breakfast sandwich. Just two pieces of toast, a bunch of cheese, a piece of sausage, and one cracked egg. I used to always go two eggs, but that doesn't sit right anymore. I think your boy's lactose intolerant, but I still power through it one egg every morning.
And I would say just at the rate at what eggs cost right now, if you can eat two eggs every single day, I don't know what they're paying you. We need to switch jobs then. I need to be the Royals insider.
No, we need to get some wins on this homestand. You're right. You're right. We need some wins here.
Vern, last food question. I know this probably doesn't happen a whole lot, but let's say that you and the wife go get brunch. Let's just say for the weekend you're just off and she's like, hey, babe, we never get a chance to go get brunch. What are you ordering at a brunch?
It's got to have... There's sausage gravy on something. Probably a biscuit, a couple of biscuits. I can go crazy. I mean, I love everything that breakfast has to offer, but I'll probably go with a Western omelet, biscuits and gravy on the side. And, if they serve one of those big old cinnamon rolls, I'll probably order one of those bad boys too and then just sleep for the rest of the day.
All right, Vern, let's start with this. The Royals just had a 6-game road trip. They went 4-2. You'll certainly take that. What did the Royals do to have a winning record this past week?
They pitched like they have really all season. But what you saw in that 3-game sweep in Texas and what you saw in the opener against the Padres was a good offense. Well, honestly, that game on Friday in San Diego, to me, was the best game of the season. They hit well. They got a good start. The bullpen was good. They ran the bases well. They defended well. And they even showed off that sixth tool, that toughness, the togetherness, the competitive spirit, getting punched in the face the way that they did in that game against the Padres to get off the mat and walk away with a victory. Two of the five most impressive wins of the year, I think, happened on this past road trip. And again, that, of course, comes back to the offense, the thing that we've been waiting on all year. We continue to wait on because we saw one run on Saturday, two runs on Sunday. But you saw Salvi, Vinny, the names. Jonathan India, Bobby Witt Jr., they were really good. Michael Garcia continues to be really good. Jack Caglione ran into a pair of home runs, so... I've said it before, C-Dot, I've told you that this team can't continue to be both, right? You can't be the worst team in the American League at hitting home runs and also the worst team in baseball when it comes to hitting with runners in scoring position. In the four wins, they weren't both of those things. Now they were still one of them, even in the games that they were winning, they weren't coming through with runners in scoring position, but they were offsetting that by hitting bombs. So as we get ready to take on the Rays and the Dodgers, you can't be both. You got to do one of two things. You got to hit multiple home runs, or you got to come through with runners in scoring position, because you know the pitching's going to be there. You believe the defense is going to be there. You hope the base running doesn't screw anything up. But like most of the first 78 games of the season, it comes back to the offense. Did they show up? Yes or no? And on the road trip, for the better part of this road trip, the answer was yes, they showed up.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show. Let's talk about Jack Caglione. You mentioned the two home runs. Let's talk about the defensive play. I was very encouraged because the athleticism is there. Some of, I think, his issues in right field just come from feel and just a lack of opportunities. I think back to his first start at Kauffman Stadium where he kind of had some very quirky balls hit in his direction. I don't know if as a team they played them correctly, but this seems like something. He has the athleticism. All he really needs is just time and more repetition and more opportunities. I think he can be a decent right fielder. Maybe he's not what Alex Gordon was in left, but he certainly can be capable. And if you can get a capable defensive right fielder and you add that to what we project him to be offensively, that's a really, really good player that plays every day.
Oh, without question. I agree wholeheartedly with the assessment of the athleticism, no doubt. He's been even better than I think fans expected. Better defensively, better on the base paths. Maybe fans were expecting... I know fans were expecting more than two home runs by now, but the at-bats, to me, are better than anyone could have expected. Right field, and to your point about he needs better jumps, and that's just experience and more time out there. Next year spring training, I would imagine he's going to look like a league average corner outfielder. But the question is, next spring training, is that where they want him? Is Salvi on this team next year in spring training? What's Vinny Pasquantino's role on this team next year in spring training? I mean, Jack Caglione could be the first baseman for this team next year. So, credit to Rusty Kuntz. Obviously, all the credit to Jack Caglione for putting the work in. He does look like an adequate right fielder, but that doesn't mean that over the course of these final 84 games, we're not going to see multiple errors from the 22-year-old, right? He made his first error on this road trip as well as he just whiffed on a ball. He's an athlete. He's a terrific ball player. He's been pitching and playing first base for his entire professional career, and his collegiate career hasn't been in the outfield since he was in high school. And who knows how seriously you're taking those reps in high school when you're hitting 500-foot tanks and everybody wants to be around you. So, wherever you put Jack Caglione, the bat is going to warrant it, and I think the work ethic is going to allow him to earn that spot in right field. You see it tonight. John Rave is the designated hitter rather than Cags. Rave is a better defender, but Cags is the future. So Rave starting this one off as the DH.
I do think that Jack Caglione has kind of reminded people of two things. And I think people know this, but sometimes it's like kind of seeing that example where baseball is really hard and he didn't make that look like it in the minor leagues. It also takes some time. There was an expectation that he was going to come up and just start dominating. He hits 270 and hits for power, and it's taken a little bit of time. I think people have to remember we're talking about somebody who just last year was in the College World Series. You just don't instantly plop into Major League Baseball and have success. I mean, you got to be Ken Griffey Jr., Alex Rodriguez. Like, you got to be one of those guys to basically hit the ground running from day one.
And maybe he hasn't hit the ground running, but he's moving at a pretty good pace for being less than a month into his big league career. Yeah, with all that stuff taken into account, no doubt, worthy of celebration, and if I'm a Royals fan, worthy of excitement, not only for the future, the fact that you have him and Bobby Witt Jr. and Michael Garcia together at least until the end of the 2030 season. So not only should you be excited about the future, but I think that's another reason why. And I'm not going to be the one to do it, but it's another reason why, if you choose to be patient with this offense, I get it. You know, it's a reason why, you know, I'm on the air after that opening victory in Arlington when the Royals' big bats come through in a big way, saying this is why you stick with the team. Because we know Vinny's better than hitting below 200 with runners in scoring position. We know Bobby's a 900 OPS guy. We know Salvi's better than what he was in the first 2 months of the season. We sure hope Jonathan India's better than what he's provided over the first half of the season. And Jack Caglione, what I think he's going to be come August and September, coupled with what we believe Bobby and Vinny and Salvi, keep saying that, but what we believe those three can be, coupled with what it looks like Jack Caglione's going to be with more experience, not just in the outfield, but also offensively. Look at what the A's Nick Kurtz is doing after he had not a bumpy start to his big league career, another one of those draft picks from a season ago. I wouldn't call it a bumpy start, but it didn't hit the ground running and hit bombs left and right. He's starting to now. I think that's coming for Jack Caglione. So for those that say, Vern, this team is so much more than just one bat away, you might be right. But one bat, coupled with Cags and Mikel now supporting those big three that we've been talking about since last season. I mean, that's what this team was missing last year, was the power of Caglione and the five-tool ability of Mikel Garcia to surround Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi. You have that now. And if Jonathan India can get going again, you know, but even as I say it, man, I got to stop myself because we've been saying this now for 3 months, C-Dot.
Vern, now that we are getting closer to finding out who the All-Stars are, I'll ask you the same question I asked you a month or so ago. If I set the over-under at Royals All-Stars at 2.5, what would you take?
I'd hammer the over, because I think it's 3 at a minimum. I can understand 4 deserve it, but you're 2 games below 500. I don't know if you deserve anything. Bubich, Estevez, Bobby, and Mikel all deserve to be there. The pitching staff has to be rewarded. The rotation has to be rewarded. So Bubich, to me, is a obvious choice. Now he'll have a chance to further that candidacy tonight. But Estevez leads the American League in saves. I think that's a slam dunk. The fact that Bobby, we talked about this last week, the fact that Bobby still doesn't lead at shortstop, he's losing to a rookie that doesn't have a home city, that is jaw-dropping. But Bobby's going to be there on name recognition, and he deserves it. He's one of the 15 best players in the sport this season. Mikel's one of the 30 best players in the sport. But again, how many players does a below 500 team really warrant for the Midsummer Classic? So if anybody's going to get lopped off and ripped off, to me it's Mikel Garcia.
You mentioned a couple of times the Royals' record, and it leads me into what I wanted to talk to you about next. Right now we're joined by our Royals insider, Josh Fournier. This team is 19-30 against teams who are over 500. That's who they play for their next 13 games. They have Tampa Bay, who leads the wild card right now in the American League. The Dodgers, who might be the best team in baseball. Seattle, who would have the third wild card spot right now. And Arizona, who is in it in the mix in the National League. This feels like that fork in the road for the Royals season, that this is where they have usually not treaded water. They've done really well when they've played the bad teams in baseball, and they've kind of struggled against those teams. What I don't want to look up is we blink 2 weeks from now, the Royals went 4-9 in this stretch, and in some ways it feels like they've really eliminated themselves from the postseason. That seems possible with the stretch that they have.
19 games to go before the All-Star break, and all of them, except for the Pirates series, are against good teams. 6 teams in total, 4 of them right now have a playoff spot. Yeah, you give me the record of how the Royals perform against good teams. Here's the cold, hard truth. You know, I hate saying it, but I remain optimistic because of all the reasons I just mentioned. But no matter the statistic that you look at, things that good teams do, the Royals are not doing. They're 500 at home, 19-19. You mentioned that they're not beating good teams. Hitting with runners in scoring position, hitting for power. The only thing that this team does that is reflective of a postseason ball club is the rotation. A rotation that to me is second only to the Philadelphia Phillies. Honestly, this Tampa ball club can make a case that our rotation is just as good as yours. No, I mean, wherever you want to go right now for this team. Nothing about it makes you feel as if they're one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. And I'm not talking about one of the five. I'm talking about upper half, top 15. They're outside of the rotation. Nothing jumps out at you and says, stick with them. Stick with them because these guys are about to turn it around. 19 games to go before the All-Star break. The Mets are in there as well. Diamondbacks, I know they're banged up, but they're still above 500. You mentioned the Mariners, the Dodgers, and, of course, the red-hot Rays that have won 22 of their last 31. No, Royals, I mean, you're hoping to go, what, 9-10 in this stretch? 8-11 going into the All-Star break and hoping to be four games below 500? I hate talking like that, but the onus is on these guys, most notably the offense, to change that sentiment.
No, and that certainly makes a lot of sense, and that's why I say right now, and you and I talked about this last week, just I don't know right now with the Royals, and that just feels like an uncomfortable position to be in. And I mean, I feel like this is the defining stretch for the Royals season. I mean, they have struggled so much against teams that are under 500 that, you know, let's say the Royals go 9-4 during this stretch. Well, then they should be in the mode of buying. If this team just continues to tread water, are we really advocating for a team that's 3-4 games under 500 to kind of push some of their chips in the middle of the table? Or when it comes to the other side, if the Royals kind of fall off a cliff and now you're getting those calls on Seth Lugo, you're getting a call for somebody in the bullpen. Like, this is the two and a half week stretch that to me will answer what I think the Royals should do.
Yeah, possibly. Not again, though. I think you can still have postseason aspirations and trade Seth Lugo. I think you can still have postseason aspirations and trade a bullpen piece. I think you can have one foot in the future and in the present because of that third wild card spot. You might be right. We might have all our answers in 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now at the All-Star break, but... You know, if this team's 46-51 at the All-Star break, five games below 500, 47-50 at the break, three games below 500, if I'm J.J. Piccolo, if I'm John Sherman, I'm not waving that white flag. Again, I'll move a Seth Lugo knowing that I'm only going to get prospects in return. But if I feel good that Cole Reagans is coming back and going to come back healthy, there's no reason why we can't have a really good month, get right back into that third wild card spot and find ourselves in October. So the only way I think we have our answer 2 weeks from now is if things go incredibly poorly or incredibly well. If they've gone the way that they've gone for a majority of this season, I think we'll be having the same conversation.
Vern, I remember, you know, in the early 2000s, I feel like Minnesota was kind of that example of small market teams. Oakland with Moneyball. I know that they haven't won a World Series, but Tampa Bay feels like that right now. Do you kind of look at it that way, that if you're the Royals, if you're a small market team, you kind of want to build your organization like Tampa Bay that's been very relevant over the last decade or so?
Yeah, and obviously John Sherman agrees. That's why he goes to those two organizations. You mentioned Tampa, and I think you can put Cleveland in there. They've taken over that mantle from Minnesota in the early aughts. Yeah, right? I mean, the coaching staff, all from Cleveland and Tampa for the most part. Now, the only pushback I think John Sherman would give you, it's the same pushback he's given me when I bring up how he's trying to emulate the Rays and the Guardians. He would say, yeah, we're trying to take their approach and ability to win at a consistent basis, but you know, we also want to do it a little differently, put our own stamp on things, not be a carbon copy of the Guardians or the Rays, and I think that's already been on display with the aggression in free agency with Lugo, with Waka, this offseason, trying to get a Santander, a Profar. And when you don't get that bat, you don't put the money in the back pocket. You go out and spend it. You bring in a Carlos Estevez. You pay a Bobby Witt Jr. Tampa's not paying Bobby Witt Jr. They're trading him away. Cleveland isn't paying Bobby Witt Jr. They traded Francisco Lindor away. So, yeah, I agree you want to do what Tampa and Cleveland have done, and that is produce pitching. Right? That's what they've done. If we're being honest, they've produced pitching better than almost any other organization. Milwaukee and the Dodgers deserve some love. but they've also won a majority of their trades and a majority of their waiver claims. J.J. Piccolo can say the same thing, but what he can say that the guy in Cleveland and Tampa cannot is, my owner's actually willing to spend some money. So to me, Kansas City has it better right now when you're looking 10 years down the line than Tampa, than Cleveland.
Two more things, Vernon, we'll get you out of here. First off, you know, when you think of the Yankees, you might think of like Derek Jeter. When you think of the Mariners, you'll think of Ken Griffey Jr. Whenever you think of the Tampa Bay Rays, who's the player that comes to mind for you?
Evan Longoria would be the name. Evan Longoria hit that big home run down the left field line in game 162 to punch their ticket to the postseason. He was always a good ball player. I think that would be my choice.
Who would the other player be? Because that's who I thought of first. Then I was like, do I know any other Tampa Bay Rays? And I really started to struggle.
Yeah, I mean, James Shields, Wade Davis, Ben Zobrist obviously came over and played a key role for those title-winning teams here in Kansas City. I know the first pitcher, the opening day starter for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in their first ever game was the knuckleballer Charlie Huff. So I think of Charlie Huff as well. Or was that the Marlins? No, you know what? I'm thinking of the Marlins. He was the... No, you're right. It's B.J. Upton, Carl Crawford, two other names that come to mind.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
There you go.
Have you ever been to their park before? I guess the old park?
No, R.I.P. Nope, never made it down there. Drove past it, but never really had an interest to get on the off-ramp.
Yeah, I was actually thinking this. You know, like part of what makes baseball so cool is all the stadiums are unique. You know, they all have their own little quirks and intricacies. You don't know, you've never heard anybody speak glowingly about Tampa Bay Stadium, which should tell you everything you need to know about it. People don't think your stadium is cool.
The only person I ever heard say anything good about it is the only person that would. I mean, you remember, he's a friend of the show, Andy McCullough, formerly of the Kansas City Star. Just always trying to be different, always trying to be special. So, yeah, he would always say that was his favorite part. But
You know what? Of all the people that we've ever had on the show, if you had told me there's one person that loves Tampa Bay Stadium, Andy McCullough would have been number one on the board for me if we were playing Family Feud.
Exactly.
Nothing
no
about
doubt.
That is surprising that he loved the trips to Tampa Bay. Denny Matthews has never been to Tampa Bay. Like, I'm not saying, like, I'm just taking a wild random guess there. I can see Tampa Bay coming up and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go and stay home. I don't think I'm making that trip. Last question here. I have been starting to look ahead. I am hopeful that we get to see Shohei pitch on Saturday at Kauffman Stadium. Have you been looking ahead?
Of course. I mean, just that Shohei's going to be in the building is always worthy of making the trip. But yeah, the way that they're using him now, too, is this opener. It's brilliant. I mean, and it's amazing watching a guy stand up on the mound at Dodger Stadium, face the first three batters, walk to the dugout, doesn't go in the dugout. Someone hands him a helmet and he just stays in the on deck circle like it's freaking Little League. The dude's amazing. I can't wait to see it.
Ooh, the text line is throwing out David Price as a former Ray. That's a good one. I forgot about David Price with the Rays. That's a really good give me a Tampa Bay Ray.
Josh Hamilton, that's where he started and made a lot of mistakes.
You know what? That's one way to put it, Vern. I appreciate your time today, man.
I appreciate it, C-Dot. Thanks, man.
Thank you. That's our guy, Josh Verdner, on the show today. Josh Hamilton made a few mistakes. No, that's, you know what? We don't need to add anything else. Rob, who's that player for you? Because Evan Longoria would have been the one that I thought of if I say, hey, name a Tampa Bay Ray. Who's the player that you would throw out there when you think of the Rays?
So there's a couple different answers other than Longoria. Like, Longoria is the answer. But when I think of, like, and I think it's different, Rays versus Devil Rays. Devil Rays, those weird black and, like, lime green color scheme. Fred McGriff. It was the end of Fred McGriff's career, but I did not see Fred McGriff as a Brave. So Fred McGriff comes to mind.
All right, are you ready for the all-time Tampa Bay Rays team? You know what? Why don't we do this on the other side? I know we're up against the break here. I just Googled it just because I was curious. Like, hey, what's the all-time Tampa Bay Rays team? Let's just take a trip down memory lane. We'll also keep talking about the Royals as they are back home this week at Kauffman Stadium. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right, I asked Rob the question, who does he think of when he thinks of the Rays? And what was your answer? Who'd you give?
I said Fred McGriff.
Fred McGriff.
That's because I wasn't allowed to answer Evan Longoria, which is my first reaction.
Okay, no, that's perfectly fine. My player would be Evan Longoria. A lot of people chimed in and said that David Price would be their list. So I found an article. This is from 2020. This is when we were just doing anything to keep ourselves amused when there were no sports. So someone actually made the all Tampa Bay Rays team. At catcher, they have a John Jasso. Are you familiar with the John Jasso?
I recognize the name. I would not have recognized him as a Tampa Bay Ray, but I do know the name.
Well, he had a 350 on base percentage. Just want to go ahead and throw that out there for you.
I wish the Royals catcher had a 350 on base percentage.
At first base, they're going with Carlos Peña as their first baseman. At second base, they're going with Ben Zobrist. At shortstop, they're going with Julio Lugo. Mm-hmm. At third base, Evan Longoria. This is their outfield. Cal Crawford, Kevin Kiermaier, Melvin Upton at right field. And with DH, they are going with Fred McGriff. That is who they have at
So is Melvin Upton, he was B.J. Upton, then he started going by Melvin, correct?
I'm not 100% sure.
Because I remember there was a B.J. Upton and a Justin Upton. I do not have any recollection of Melvin Upton. I think
we got to Google this. Who is Melvin Upton? I don't remember a Melvin Upton. How did we get from his name was, it was B.J. and then he just decided one day, I don't want to be B.J. anymore. I just want to be Melvin. That makes sense. Please explain this because now I'm confused. I'm starting to think they got another brother that we don't know about.
All right. So Google says his name is Melvin Emmanuel B.J. Upton Jr., but he was Melvin, and he just went by B.J.
Okay. So Melvin Upton and B.J. Upton are the same person.
They're the same person.
Okay, we found it. See, they threw me off with the Melvin. I was thinking that was somebody we didn't know, but we do know B.J. Upton. They are going with Fred McGriff as the D.H. For their rotation, they are going with David Price, James Shields, Blake Snell, and Scott Kazmaier. That is their rotation. So if you were curious, that is the all-time Rays team.
That Rays team would get beat by a lot of other best teams ever in baseball.
Yeah, I mean,
their team's like 12 years old, so yeah.
I'm not even sure if they beat the Diamondbacks. Like, if we did that same thing with the Diamondbacks, I'm not sure if they would beat them. Because you're right, like, going up against the Royals, the Royals have, you know, 50 years of more history than the Rays
do. Would they beat the Marlins?
No, I don't think so. You want to play that game with the Marlins and see if they'll beat the Marlins?
The Marlins would have Melvin Cabrera, which would be...
Marlins had some really good teams there for
Josh
a time.
Josh Beckett, yeah. The Marlins, I think, would give that team work.
Yeah, the Marlins team is much better than theirs. Actually, you know what? Let me find it. You know what? I got it right here. I didn't think we would be here with the Rays versus Marlins team, but we're here now. They are going to go with, I'm reading this. They didn't pick Pudge Rodriguez because he only played 1 year with the Marlins.
Feels a little bit like cheat. Okay.
They didn't go with him. So they went with a JT Realmuto is who they went with.
He's now a Philly because he was good for them. So all right, that's not a bad pick.
They're going with Jeff Conine at first. At second base, they're going with Dan Uggla. At shortstop, Hanley Ramirez. At third base, they're going with Miguel Cabrera.
That's a stacked infield, by the way.
That's really good. Gary Sheffield in left, Yelich in center field, Juan Carlos Stanton in right field, starting pitcher, Jose Fernandez, Josh Johnson, Kevin Brown, and Dontre Willis, and Josh Beckett if you want as a fifth starter. Yeah, it's not even close between those two teams. The Marlins had like two really, really good teams. The Rays have been good, but they haven't been Marlins good. The Marlins have definitely had more individual players.
I mean, I was thinking of one of those other expansion franchises. I'm like, oh, let's see. You're right. The Marlins might give a lot of teams work.
Oh, for sure. The Marlins at least had a time where the Marlins were kind of cool. Like when they had like Juan Pierre and Josh Beckett and Dontrelle Willis, the Marlins had a time where like, oh, that team's actually kind of cool. I don't know if we've ever looked at the Rays as being cool. I don't know if that's ever been a thing.
That's because Miami's cool, but Tampa Bay isn't. No one's ever been like, you know where I want to go? Tampa Bay.
That's a good point. I can't argue that. I can't add to it. I can't take away from it. When you put it like that, that actually makes a lot of sense on why we feel the way that we feel about the Tampa Bay Rays. We were talking about this with Vern. It is really difficult to build a stadium that no one has great memories of. Like whenever they get rid of Kauffman, there are people that, you know, maybe you're not from here that come visit Kauffman that leave thinking, man, that was a really beautiful stadium. Like part of what makes baseball such a fun product and so special and so unique is that every baseball stadium is its own. Kauffman's very different than Safeco or Petco or Wrigley or whatever. Like baseballs are their own unique thing. How do you build a stadium? I mean, at one point the Trop was new. It was brand new. How do you build a stadium that no one loves? That just seems really, really difficult to do.
I mean, I would say first things first is having baseball indoors. Like me and other people can disagree about dome stadiums or turf versus real grass for football. Like it is a honest to goodness real conversation to have. Baseball is not an indoor sport. No, like not even a little bit. And then they had goofy catwalks and they had special rules for ground rule doubles and the stadium was always empty. And then they had a stingray tank out and right, which is who cares. It was always empty. It just piped in sound. Everything about it stunk. And then, I mean, somehow I don't know. It somehow got worse. They now play at the Yankees minor league facility, which is so much worse than their facility. But yes, the new Kauffman, I think we're all going to, we might have fondness the old one. We were all going to like the new one, unlike the Trop where it opened and immediately was disliked by everyone.
I want to read this little blurb to you very quickly. This is from Jeff Passan of ESPN. So he gave his most likely to be traded players at the deadline. Here's a list of 50. He has Seth Lugo at 6th on the list with a 40% chance of being traded. Here's what he wrote. Lugo has posted mid-3 ERAs or lower for 5 seasons despite having below average fastball velocity and good to not great strikeout rates. He then goes on and then says, with a Nathan Eovaldi type contract awaiting Lugo in free agency, Kansas City could opt to move him, especially if Cole Reagan's injured shoulder doesn't improve. The best fits for Lugo: Chicago, Houston, Toronto, San Diego, Los Angeles, a 40% chance of being traded. There will be no shortage of teams that will be very interested in Seth Lugo if the Royals are actually making him available. If the Royals are actually selling Seth Lugo off to the highest bidder, it's really no money in a contending team sense. He's making $15 million this year. He is more than likely going to opt out. Like, if you are Seth Lugo's agent, you have to tell him to opt out at the end of the season. Even if you want to come back to the Royals, it's a one-year player option that locks you into $15 million when you will absolutely make more than $15 million this offseason from any franchise. So it's not a mutual option or a club option. It is just his decision. I know it sounds crazy that you would just opt out of making $15 million, but you would opt out of 15 if you can get $50 million, which is probably in line for Seth Lugo. So we're talking about a player who you think has a very relative short shelf life of continuing to be in a Royals uniform. And with the way that his contract is, we're talking about probably, let's cut it in half, $7.5 million, maybe $6.5 million, somewhere in that range of when he actually gets traded. Almost every contending team will take on $6 million in payroll to go get a legitimate second or third starter for you. So there's going to be no shortage. And we all know it only takes one team. But more so than it just taking one team, what you usually need is a bidding war. You normally need 3 or 4 teams fighting over one player and feeling like that is the missing piece that can get you over the hump and get to what you need. I don't think we're there yet. But I do think that the top storyline with the Royals, once this stretch is over, They have a 13-game stretch against Tampa Bay, the Dodgers, Seattle, and Arizona. They then have a home series against the Pirates. I think once we get out of this 14 to 17-game stretch and we get a lot more clarity on what the Royals are, I think the conversation will then shift to you have to trade Seth Lugo. If you don't think that Seth Lugo is part of your long-term plan and you got a chance to get a couple of good prospects out of Seth Lugo, I just don't really know how you can justify keeping him if you're the Royals. And maybe you don't want to do it because you want to be all in and you want to try to go for it. And you just heard Vern that you can trade Lugo and still go out and try to make a playoff spot. But if you're telling me that Seth Lugo is 36 years old, he's probably not a player that you want for a 2-3 year contract. So he's not a player that you really want to re-sign. You only got him for the remainder of this season, and you think that he can yield you pretty good dividends as a very solid starter for a handful of teams. I think you're going to have to eventually have that conversation, a serious conversation about what to do with Seth Lugo. We can take your phone calls on this, 913-586-7965. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the hits. We'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. We continue to get more news about what could potentially be happening with Arrowhead and Kauffman Stadium. Keep it right here, so drive.
Hey, it's Cole Reagans from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to the Royals and we'll start talking about the stadium. Text line 913-586-7965. What we were talking about right before the break is Jeff Passan made a list of the top 50 most likely to be traded players. Seth Lugo was number 6 on the list. And they just say that, hey, he's due for a new contract next year. He certainly is. And it would make sense for Kansas City to move him. These are the 5 teams that he has as good fits: the Cubs, Houston, Toronto, San Diego, and the Dodgers. Someone texted in, if the Royals make Lugo available, I imagine he won't be going to an American League team. I don't think the Royals are good enough right now to worry about that. I'm worried about getting the best possible long-term value from the Royals. Now, I'm not looking to trade him to an American League team, and I'm not interested in trading him to Detroit or Cleveland. But if you think the best offer is Toronto, then I'm trading him to Toronto if you're the Royals. That's how I would play it. It'd be a lot different if we're talking about trading him in the division. But right now, the Royals are under 500, and the Royals need some things. And if you're not an organization that's looking to go out of free agency and potentially spend the money to get those things, I don't know if beggars can be choosers when, for now 2 consecutive seasons, you desperately need an outfield bat. So that's what I'd be in the business of looking for and trying to find the best possible one and a player that you think either is major league ready or a guy who is on the cusp of coming up. You give him some experience the rest of the season and he is projected to be your opening day starter in 2026. That's how I would try to handle it with Lugo. I think a lot of teams are going to be interested in Lugo. He's shown you that he can pitch in the postseason. He's shown you that he's reliable. He can eat up innings for you. It's not going to cost you any money the rest of the way. We're talking about somewhere between $6 to $7 million for the prorated rate based on what he's making. I think Seth Lugo is going to be a very desirable piece at the deadline, and the question has just come to, are the Royals going to be sellers? I think that's going to be the question. I want to ask you guys this, and we won't spend a whole lot of time on it. So there is a story that is circulating right now that there was a ruling that the NFL and its owners colluded against Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, and Kyler Murray. That you guys remember whenever Deshaun Watson was negotiating his deal and he got that guaranteed contract, you remember there was a lot of conversation about, is this going to be what new quarterback contracts look like? Well, we now know that the owners had a owners closed meeting and were exchanging text messages to basically say, no, we're not going to let that happen. You can't do that. We then also know that the Players Association knew about this and hid this information from the players. Like, if you read this lawsuit, it is crazy. And a judge found it. Hey, we think this happened. We think that the 32 owners colluded to make sure that quarterbacks didn't get guaranteed deals. This is my question. Is there a story that fans would care about? Because I don't think that fans care about this story, and I don't really plan on spending too much time talking about it. There are some stories that I think are media stories, and I think this is a media story. Now, I think it is a very important story, but I've done this long enough to know what stories get you guys all hot and bothered and what stories don't. And the owners coming together to suppress wages in the NFL, it's just not one of those stories for you guys. You guys don't care. They make enough money. They should be happy with whatever they get. You don't care that the owners came together to stop this, essentially, which is illegal. They also, I guess we also know, remember the concussions. They knew the health risk of playing football. They hid this information from the players. It ended up being a really big deal. Now, the concussion story, I think, mattered a lot more in kind of casual football spaces. And you remember, we had that, hey, would your mom let you play football? Is football safe? We had those conversations. Are there these kind of stories that we think that the average NFL fan will care about? Or are we just so far at the point that it just kind of is what it is? Like, this is wrong, what they did to the players. This is 100% wrong. They came together to deny play. You cannot do that. But I just don't think that it matters. I think this is a story that media people kind of pat each other on the back on and talk about, hey, you did a good job. And I think in 2-3 days, I think the general sentiment from the public is going to be, we don't care about this. Move on. Talk about something else. Is there a story, Rob, that you think could come out in this regard that could get fans to care?
No, I don't. And I don't want that to be the answer. And maybe I'm just doing what media people do and saying this is good journalism and this is important to know and all those things. But I don't think fans care. I don't understand the how, but there's this thought in sport and baseball. Baseball hurts the worst, that the owners are super greedy and only out for their own bottom line. And you see it in Oakland, sell the team chants. We saw it a year ago with the vote. People were upset with John Sherman. All he cares about is his bottom line, this, that, and the other. This story is basically saying the NFL owners did the same thing, except for they broke the law to do it, or they came very close to breaking the law, and it's not even moving the needle. I would say if this story broke another sport, there's a chance we'd be talking about it in a much more premium position of the show. This happened in the most popular sport in America, and we're like, eh, I don't think people care. And I don't know there's a story about, as long as the football's unaffected on Sunday, I don't think fans care about how the sausage is made.
Yeah, I think the only kind of story like this that people would care about is if it uncovered something wrong with the integrity of the game. Like, I mean, we get these stories just about every single offseason. Every single offseason, we get some of these kind of stories. Like, you remember a couple years ago about the emails, and the emails, like, owners are sharing pictures with each other. No one really cared. The only thing that really happened from that story was John Gruden got fired. That's the only real thing that happened from this. Like, they found that the owner of Washington was sending pictures of cheerleaders to other NFL employees. Don't really think people care that much about that story. In this story, we have proof, text messages, phone calls. Owners of the NFL had secret meetings to ensure that Lamar Jackson basically stayed on the Ravens. Hey, Lamar Jackson is asking for a guaranteed deal. None of the rest of you give him that. Then, I don't know if you read the whole thing. I think it was Justin Herbert signed a contract. The owner of the Chargers then thanked, or the owner of the Cardinals then thanked the Chargers for doing that and said, this is going to help us in our negotiation with Kyler Murray. They've been doing this entire time when it comes to the players. The concussion thing is undeniable now at this point if you do the reading. The NFL had the science and lied to the players for a decade. The only thing I think would resonate like this, if it was a scandal with gambling, it's the only thing I think would resonate at this point. I think if they found out, you know, conversations between owners and this owner said this, or this owner did this, or this owner pressured this official to make this kind of call, that's the only off-the-field story I think can resonate.
I mean, it's semantics. We're saying the same thing. I think fans, as long as the football isn't affected on Sunday, they do not care how the sausage is made. Carrington, fans don't even care about the fact the NFL is doing all the things they complain about in other sports. They're playing more and more international games. They're playing more and more games behind paywalls every year. They're really not caring about the fact that it's a Sunday sport anymore. They're playing on, what, almost every day of the week in the last 2 years? You know what fans said? Cool, I will consume it. As long as the football isn't affected on Sunday, no fan cares how the sausage is made. They just care, can they drive out to the local stadium, have a few beers, a nice little tailgate, and watch their football or watch their red zone and football on TV, and then wake up the next day and talk at the water cooler about the football. That is what people seem to only care about. And the other stuff is just ancillary. And I wish it wasn't, but it is.
Yeah, someone on the text line says, CDOT, what's illegal about it? It's like literally illegal. And then someone says, this is why they have union reps. This is what I'm telling you, is the players' union knew about this. I'm saying is the NFL PA, like the people who are there in place to protect the players, knew that the owners did this and then kept it quiet. That's illegal. Like everything about the way that they treated Lamar Jackson is illegal. Everything that they did with Kyler Murray is illegal. And I don't think people care. I just think it's like, the NFL, the system that they have set up right now, I'm telling you, it is amazing what they have been able to set up. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to talk about the stadiums. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.